From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Fremont.
Pacifica, California.
Pleasanton.
I'm from Vallejo.
Me from Antioch.
Coming up, we'll visit two of California's endangered state parks, one that volunteers raised funds to keep open.
Coming in and volunteering, for instance, for the state parks here, I really give you an outlet to use your talents, and you feel that you're still contributing to society.
And another that's still slated to close on July 1st.
People are going into the closed parks and just spray painting everything and tearing things apart. And we're hoping our park visitors will be a lot nicer. We have to have some optimism on that.
And we'll meet some of the men who fight the state's wildfires while doing time in prison.
There's 40-foot trees on fire. So you get out there, you get geared up, you drop your shroud and your goggles, you're going right into it.
Things are heating up today on Cross Currents. This past weekend, San Francisco's streets were filled with pride. Thousands of people participated in the 42nd annual event celebrating lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people and culture. The youth producers of Out Loud Radio were there talking to participants about what pride means to them. They bring us this audio postcard.
Hello, my name is Angel, and I'm here with Out Loud Radio, and we are at Dolores Park. And I am here with...
Osei the Gay, 24 years old.
And he is from...
San Francisco, California. I think pride pretty much lost itself within the LGBT community, because you see a lot of allies and straight folks who don't identify as queer or lesbian or gay. So I feel like it's more of a party for folks to get drunk and smoke and, yeah.
And I am here with?
Tom Harper.
And Tom Harper, how old are you?
23. It is really important to remember the history and to honor the legacy and think of how far we've come and realize that this is less just a parade for having fun and more a march for rights. But at the same time, so much of the time, we can't really have fun or cut loose in our day-to-day lives because of the oppression that there still is. So having a place where you can just cut loose and have fun and forget about how hard it is also a positive thing. It really depends on the individual and your circumstances.
My name is Shay. I come here every year because only in San Francisco can you experience like the diversity within like the diversity of the diversity. So this is as diverse as I think it gets, and it's like a very good show of solidarity, and everyone can be exactly who they want to be at all times, and it's all accepting.
I am Dennis Jones. I am from San Francisco. I am 19 years old, and I'm gay. I see Bud Light advertisements, I see Xfinity, which used to be Comcast, and I see like just a lot of other places. It doesn't really seem helpful or really beneficial to the community at all. Like nothing's really empowering about a lot of these advertisements.
I love it. It's just a day. I was saying there's like a few classic like gay pride outfits, and it's definitely like gold lamé booty shorts, like the rainbow boa. I think it's just like a great time to feel comfortable with who you are, and like if not today, then when else? Just be proud and happy and do whatever you want to do. And it may be ridiculous and it may be over the top to some people, but it's fun.
My name is Scout DiBartolo. I am 30 years old and I live in San Jose, California.
And I am here with?
Juanita.
What does the word trans mean to you?
A bunch of people not afraid to show who they are.
Hi, my name is Elise, and I live here in San Francisco. I am currently 25 years old. Is this your kissing booth? It is my kissing booth. I just love that word, pride. I think it's so much about being who you are and loving who you want to love. And I mean, historically, it's huge. Just starting in San Francisco with people being able to be open about who they love and why. But I think it's blossomed into so much more. It really is just a festival of people loving each other. It's totally about love.
That snapshot of gay pride was brought to us by Angel Van Stark, Diego Valencia, MK Spat, Kenneth Yu, Nico Summers, and Sage Liebenson. They're all youth producers at Out Loud Radio, and they interviewed people attending pride events this past weekend. You can find out more about them at outloudradio.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Before you pack your camping gear to head out to a California state park this summer, you'll probably want to check and make sure it's still open. Next week, state officials are expected to announce which parks will close in order to save the state $22 million a year. For the past year, 70 parks have been on the closure list. So far, at least 30 have found other ways to keep their gates open, largely using donations from individual park lovers as well as environmental groups. Another 20 may be saved in the coming week. KALW's Leela Day has the story of one such park close to home.
Just 47 miles north of San Francisco, a country road winds through the small town of Glen Ellen, where a sign directs you to Jack London State Historic Park. Bob Ruther is a docent at the park. We're walking along trails lined with ancient manzanita trees. Everything is still, like we're walking through a painting. The air is damp from an early morning rain. Down a hill, a group of teenage boys from a halfway house pull out sandwiches and sit at a bench with their teacher.
You see this bush here? You know what this is? Did you ever hear of a bay leaf? It's called California bay laurel.
A canopy of trees leads to a stone house where rattlesnakes sometimes lay on warm rocks. These snakes aren't a big concern. There's only been a couple of snake bites in the past 30 years. The bigger problem is how the park is going to maintain a 1,400-acre property in the midst of major budget cuts.
That's one of the things that I can't understand is you know, on a logical basis, is why we're closing things that release people's negativity and you know, in this particular environment that we're in, where people have a lot of economic problems. I mean, you walk through a park and you know your problems go away.
This place means a lot for Ruther. He's a retired public defense attorney who found himself with a crisis of purpose without full-time work.
And all of a sudden, there's nothing to do. It's a very good accelerant for depression. But coming in and volunteering, for instance, for the state parks here, really give you an outlet to use your talents, and you feel that you're still contributing to society and you're doing something.
More than 200 other volunteers share his perspective. But Jack London was one of the 70 parks initially slated to close next week. It was spared because of a new law that allows qualified nonprofits to operate parks for up to 5 years, or until the state's finances improve. A nonprofit organization called the Valley of the Moon Natural History Association took over at Jack London, raising funds and overseeing the park's operations. Today, volunteers patrol the grounds, and they will until the park can afford a full-time ranger. It'll cost $45,000 a year.
So we're coming up to the house complex where Jack lived. And you see that big tree in front of you? That's a live oak tree. It could be anywhere from 200 to 900 years old. So we're going to go to the cottage, okay?
We walk inside the House of Happy Walls and look at an exhibit that tells the story of Jack London's life.
As a child, he was a hobo, traveled on the railroads. He was an able-bodied seaman. He was an oyster pirate when he was 15. I mean, you know, it goes on and on and on about what he did.
Mementos from his life are everywhere, including a gramophone.
Over here, I want to show you this area here. This is where he slept on his porch. His wife had insomnia, so he didn't sleep with his wife.
Upstairs, a volunteer is practicing on a Steinway piano. Concerts in the hall are actually one of the ways the park is trying to raise revenue, along with increasing the entrance fee from $8 to $10, cutting back on operating hours, hosting weddings, and searching for more private funding.
And a lot of people can't afford to employ a therapist, but they can spend a little money to get into a park. A lot of the parks you can enter free. What's one you can enter free if you walk in it? So in that sense, parks are beneficial to the people in that they provide therapy.
The concern is for how long. The governor has proposed a budget of $110 million for state parks. That would be $22 million less than last year. While some parks like Jack London will stay open because of funding from private organizations, it's not necessarily a sustainable arrangement, despite the passion of volunteers like Bob Ruther.
I mean, all you have to do is walk through the woods here or walk through the history of Jack London, and your thoughts of your problems go away.
At Jack London State Park, I'm Leela Day for Cross Currents.
Do you know of a park people are trying to keep open? You can share your story at our Facebook page. We're KALW News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Not all parks will be as lucky as Jack London. About 15 are still orphaned. Nobody's fighting to keep them open. One of those is Moss Landing State Park, just between Santa Cruz and Monterey. KALW's Kyle Tabuenafroli visited the park a year ago and brought us back this story.
I'm on a beach in the smack dab middle of California. The breeze coming off the jet is getting violent, and it's really cold. Through the fog, I can only see a couple hundred feet of gray ocean. This is where I meet Mike.
Mike French.
He's reading the low waves and the bored surfers for signs of a good set. He's a local.
Yeah, I'm local.
Which means?
Oh, yeah, I come and check it three or four times a week at least. And it's only good enough to go in once or twice a week, particularly at this time of year.
We watch the surfers bob for a bit, and I ask him what makes this state park so special for him.
Well, the fact that the jetty is here and the way the it causes the sandbars.
He launches into this whole deal about the sandbars and the swells and the jetty's paddling channel and how in the winter, the coldness from the north bumps the waves to just the right height and form.
And you can ride it without just getting foam.
He points to a surfer coming in hot.
Like, exactly like that. Oh, it's a great spot, I mean, for many reasons.
A great spot for surfers. A great spot for bird watchers and the otter photographers that show up every year. A great spot for the fishermen on the jetty, hoping to catch some luck. This is Moss Landing State Beach, and in a year, it'll still be here, but Californians won't. The state's closing the park, maybe for good. And that was news to French.
No, I hadn't heard that.
He thought about it for a sec and then said something interesting.
Well, now, when you say closing the beach, meaning they're going to wall it off and there will be no access?
That's
or
that
there's going to be no maintenance?
I was wondering the same thing. So, I talked with Park Ranger, Dana Jones.
This is the Monterey District.
She manages all the state parks on the Central Coast, from
Henry Coe, down to Julia Pfeiffer Burns, over to San Juan Batista.
Jones has to close four parks in her area by next year. That's close to 140 square miles of chaparral, beach, and forest, like three San Franciscos put together. So, I asked her what closed really means. And what she said surprised me.
So really, we're not sure what closed means. Or my thought is probably after summer's over, we'll start looking at how we're going to, you know, make the transition and make the closures.
Jones has never had to make such drastic cuts, but this year it was necessary. Moss Landing looked so modest. I mean, what sort of money does the state put into it?
That beach. Just on the surface, the first thing you can look at is we have a contract with a vendor that provides the outhouses for us. So there's a cost there. We have trash cans out there. We have
just like the surfer detailing what made Moss Landing so perfect, the ranger launches into the fine print of what it really takes to keep the place together. The cost of the ranger patrol, the cost of the lifeguards, seasonal and non-seasonal, and...
And for Moss Landing, this is a really big one.
The cost to remove the sand that blows across the road from the beach at least five times a year. Then, there's the cost of erasing vandalism, of fixing the fences, of keeping the endangered snowy plover alive in the dunes.
We're not doing it. Let's finish how much it costs.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we have resources, because on at Moss Landing State Beach, we do have a number of endangered species. both animals and plants. So we have what we call natural resources crew.
She goes on and on, but what I really get out of her speech is that this beach, this mile of sand they're closing by next July, it costs a lot to her, to the state, and to us. But what happens when we shut them down? Jones has been looking to another state that recently shut down some parks, Minnesota. And
they're seeing just huge vandalism issues. People are going into the closed parks and just spray painting everything and tearing things apart. And we're hoping our park visitors will be a lot nicer. We have to have some optimism on that.
So I don't know. Surfers will get out here and surf. I can guarantee you that's going to happen. What the ramifications of, you know, closing the park would be, I don't know. You know, maybe there won't be trash cans, there won't be porta potties. People won't be able to come out here and watch the otters from this side.
Yeah, but there'll be surfers long after it closes.
You bet.
And so I say goodbye and leave the cold, foggy beach behind. I look back and Mike French is still standing there watching the ocean. After the out-of-towners pack up their picnics, after Ranger Jones padlocks the gate, after the sand blows over the road and the ice plants stake their new claim over the forgotten concrete, after it all, he'll probably still be out there. In Moss Landing, I'm Kyle Tabuena-Froley for Cross Currents.
Moss Landing is a public beach, and the California Coastal Commission has said that legally, the state can't close it. State Parks Director Ruth Coleman told the San Jose Mercury News that the state would padlock bathrooms and remove staffing, but that the gates would remain open. Is a park you love closing? What do you think about the state's decision to close parks at all? You can share your thoughts at our tip line. It's 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106 and we'll try to get your voice on the air. It's summer in California, and that means fire season is in full force. And it could be the worst one in years.
National analysts say we could be facing our worst fire season since 2007 and 2008, when more than 800,000 acres in our state burned.
The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, better known as CAL FIRE, responds to more than 5,000 wildfires each year. They protect more than 31 million acres of California's privately owned wildlands and provide emergency services for most of the state's counties. In high season, over 20% of that firefighting force is made up of state prison inmates. They live and train at special facilities called conservation camps. CAL FIRE runs 37 of these camps across the state, which house around 4,000 mostly male inmates. Inmates have been integral to CAL FIRE for more than 60 years. They gain skills and have a chance at rehabilitation while saving California $80 million a year. But the state's new policy of realignment, which transfers low-level offenders out of state prisons and into county jails, means the future of these fire camps is at risk. By next year, California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, or CDCR, estimates the camps will lose half their population. KALW's Nicole Jones takes us to Ben Lomond Conservation Camp in Santa Cruz County.
Work off, fellas.
It's just before 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning at the Ben Lomond Conservation Camp in Santa Cruz County. On the basketball court, nearly 100 state prison inmates wearing bright orange jumpsuits and clutching lunch pails are lining up for roll call.
All right, you guys are going to Lockheed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we got Trujillo.
Trujillo, F9942.
Okay, Silva.
Silva, F6902.
Sanchez.
Once everyone's accounted for, they'll board a bus and head out for park cleanup or fire training.
So basically, we're transferring custody to CAL FIRE, and so we're giving them 13. To let them know that that's what they got on the cruise today.
Ortega.
This transfer of custody between CDCR and CAL FIRE happens twice a day, Monday through Friday. Once in the morning, then again in the afternoon, when they all go back to the camp for dinner and sleep.
Go ahead and line up right over there. And what he's doing right here, we're just verifying that he still looks the same. He hasn't done anything to change his appearance. So we got
Kotke.
Okay.
Conservation camps are not a typical custody experience. For one thing, there's a lot less security.
A lot of things to get used to in a conservation camp program.
Lawrence Rodriguez has been camp commander at Ben Lomond for a year and a half.
Where the inmates have more time to themselves. They have more access to tools, things like that. It's not the secure them in a cell and walk away.
Rodriguez has been with CDCR for 25 years, with a large portion of his time spent on San Quentin's death row. He says the conservation camps are a very different experience, and the inmates know it.
Even though we don't have razor wire or towers in the camp, we have our camp limits, and the inmates abide by our limits, our policies, and our rules over here. They rather be at camp than inside the institution.
In addition to training inmates to fight fires, conservation camps offer GED classes, religious counseling, substance abuse programs, and a chance to learn vocational skills. Inmates also earn a little money while at camp. They're paid $1 an hour while out on the fire line. Some end up with $1,000 or $2,000 in their pockets.
I came here as a cook. Went in the mechanic shop 16 months ago, and I've learned more in those 16 months than I have in 20 years of prison.
Kenneth Moore got to Ben Lomond 17 months ago. By the time he arrived, he'd already served over 20 years behind bars for drug sales. He's got just 8 months left, which he'll spend here.
You're going to be given opportunities here to do what you want to do in life if you take advantage of it. You can come in here and play the old prison game, or you can come here and learn something that's going to serve you when you go out on the streets.
According to CDCR's data, inmates at camp have just over a 50% recidivism rate, compared to 65% of inmates behind prison walls. To be transferred into a conservation camp, an inmate needs to be serving time for a low-level, nonviolent offense screened and medically cleared by CDCR staff. With those requirements met, he moves on to firefighting training at one of two facilities, California Correctional Center in Susanville or Sierra Conservation Center in Jamestown. There, he must pass a week-long physical training test and an 8-day fire training course run by CAL FIRE. That's when he learns about wildfires and how to safely use equipment, as well as do things like hike with large packs and build fire breaks. Once he passes all the courses, he's placed into a conservation camp where he'll work on community projects and during the high season, fight fires.
This is probably the only rehabilitation they have is camps. And they're talking about closing some. I said, you know, that'd be the worst thing that could happen to these guys.
Captain Jose Ruiz has been with CAL FIRE for 29 years and at Ben Lomond for 14. As prison budgets have declined over the years, he says he's seen vocation and education programs, like those the camps offer, hit hardest. And the state's new policy of realignment means fewer inmates will even end up at the camps. Ruiz says that's a loss.
If you're going to do time in the Department of Correction and Rehabilitation, this is the next opportunity, you know, give back to the community, that's for sure.
I like going out and especially helping the public.
Jacob Reif is 26 years old and has been at Ben Lomond for 2 months. He's already served most of a 4.5-year sentence for 3 different residential burglaries. These days, he does work helping homeowners.
Just the other day, we're working right down the street, clearing a fuel break for these homes that are right down here on Empire Grade. And they come by and they honk and they say, thank you very much for doing this for us. It's been 100 years since anything's been done around here. So, you know, that's a real rewarding feeling.
About 80% of inmates' time is spent doing conservation and repair work like this. But Reif says it's the fire experiences that stay with him.
I remember one instance on the side of a hill in the Modoc National Forest. We pulled up into the black, and we all got off the bus, unloaded, and there's 40-foot trees on fire. So you get out there, you get geared up, you drop your shroud and your goggles, you're going right into it. I mean, and black smoke all on your face. You can hardly breathe. And adrenaline's pumping, and you're basically going. And that's when the crew really comes together at that point.
Reif says when he gets out, he still wants to fight fires.
I am going to pursue this when I get out on the streets. I'm going to try to be in a part of CAL FIRE when I get out of here. Be on an engine crew, And I know I'm going to have to take some college courses and stuff like that, but I'm going to pursue this when I get out of here. I love it that much.
The Ben Lomond Conservation Camp has given Reif and many other inmates a second chance, and it continues to save the state millions of dollars while providing crucial emergency services. In an average year, nearly 4,000 inmates work for a total of 3 million firefighting hours and 7 million community service hours. It ends up saving California's more than $80 million annually. But with camps projected to lose half their population next year, inmates may have to come from county jail. CDCR has proposed a rate that would be significantly cheaper than what it costs counties to house inmates now. But no one signed anything yet. At Ben Lomond Camp in Santa Cruz County, I'm Nicole Jones for Cross Currents.
Links to all of our criminal justice reporting are at our website, klw.org. And that's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Buffy Almendares, Hanna Ababa, Julie Kane, Artem Kunahoffs, Leela Day, Zoe Brezhny, Audrey Dilling, Lupe Hernandez, Lisa Ratner, Erica Mu, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And especially thanks to you. Because of your support, we are listener-powered radio. The song you're hearing is by Bay Area rockers Dirty Ghosts. They'll be in San Francisco this Wednesday at Brick and Mortar Music Hall. Music starts about 9 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.